Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together.
Welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, CEO Dave Humphreys, and today I'm joined by Sam Doody, Site Director at Airbus Portsmouth. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you very much, Dave. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and in fact, we've actually come to you in a first for the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. We're out on location at Airbus, so great to be here. So you're site director. What does that involve? What's your job?
Great question. It's really about the strategic direction of the site. So it's making sure that the site has everything it needs to run, to operate, the buildings are safe, we have the right people, the right skills, but also looking a little bit at the business side. So are we making sure that we're developing the right technology for the future, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and how long have you been here at the Portsmouth Airbus site?
So I joined 20 years ago this summer.
Right.
I joined as a graduate, actually. Yep. There's a rather embarrassing photo of me standing in an ill-fitting suit outside of the site on my first day. And I've been here for 20 years ever since, really. The people sometimes say, why haven't you done something different? And my view is always, actually, I really enjoy what I do.
Yeah.
Every morning I wake up and I want to come into work. And I love doing it, so in which case, why do anything different? So I've been here ever since.
Absolutely, yeah. What's the saying? Do something you love and it's not a job. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So what? How did you end up here in the first place?
So I went to university up in Durham.
Right.
And I did a degree in physics.
Yeah.
And I always knew I wanted to do something cool and future looking, something technological. And when I started looking at jobs to go further forward, Airbus, it was Astrium at the time, before they renamed themselves, they really reached out to me because of the amazing things that we do. I mean, sending something to space is pretty cool. It's pretty out there. It's not the run-of-the-mill thing you can do. So for me, it really jumped out as something that I really want to do, something I really want to go to. It's just that real cutting-edge thing, technology, that actually you don't get everywhere.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a real quick, that's what I want to do, that's where I want to go. So as soon as I could do, I applied. I was lucky enough that they offered me a job.
Yeah.
And then ever since, that's been it.
Yeah. And then I guess you've just worked your way up through the business to the site director role.
I guess I've been quite lucky. I spent a lot of years after as a graduate working in the clean rooms we have here, putting things together, being hands-on, moving then into design. I did various work on airborne systems, so sort of demonstrators for space and flying in planes, and working up through to team leaders and heads of departments. And then last year, actually, a year ago, I was lucky enough to be offered the role as site director, which I jumped at because it gives me a real opportunity to make a difference to people. And that's one of my big values and passions is actually trying to make progress and give people purpose and support them and help them. And a site director really helps us. We've got about 1,000 people on site, so it's quite a big responsibility. There's a lot of people that depend on me and the team and the leadership team to keep us running. So it's a real privilege, a real honour.
Okay. So before we talk more about the site itself and what goes on here at Portsmouth, Airbus is clearly bigger than just the Portsmouth site. Tell us a little bit about Airbus as a company and what it does.
So Airbus is the largest aerospace company in the world, actually.
Right.
It produces, most of it is producing commercial aircraft. If you ever fly on holiday or with business, chances are it's an Airbus aircraft that you've flown on. But it's not just aircraft. We do aircraft, we do helicopters, and we also do space. And that's the part that we sit in here at Airbus Portsmouth.
Right.
It's 150,000 people around the world.
Yeah.
It's a massive multinational company, but with national footprints, and the UK is one of the home countries of Airbus.
So where else are the sort of main locations?
So the main locations or the main sites in Airbus, the four home countries are the UK, France, Germany and Spain.
Right.
That's the core from which Airbus was founded. Airbus is a conglomerate of lots of other companies that have merged and joined to create this European champion. So they're the four home countries from which the main entities came from. But there's bases in the US, in China, all around the world, really.
Yeah, but predominantly European.
Correct.
Its sort of foundation.
Yeah.
How did Airbus start off in terms of, you know, the company founding and what it originally did?
So the portfolio really is that conglomeration of lots of other smaller companies. So the aircraft part started with lots of other companies around Europe that made aircraft. And actually, it was a European government decision to say, let's try and build a champion and bring them together, because each one on its own wouldn't survive in the global climate. So actually, let's bring a bunch of them together. And that's really how Airbus has grown, by acquiring other companies, bringing them together and taking in their expertise and skills.
Yeah, interesting. So Portsmouth.
Yeah.
So the big clue is the poster that you walk past as you come onto the site of the 75th anniversary, 2025. You've clearly been here just over 75 years.
Yep.
So how's the Portsmouth site come about and grown?
So about between the 1930s and the 1950s, the UK was actually building rockets on the Isle of Wight, just next to the Needles. Yeah. With Black Knight and Black Arrow. And to support that, they needed a big workforce, bigger than they could get on the Isle of Wight. So actually the UK government supported bringing some companies to found here. This used to be the Portsmouth Airfield, Portsmouth International Airport. Yeah. And in the 1950s, they started to put the electronic companies here. So we've been building, we start off building electronics for, it's all for harsh environments, but for the rockets.
Right.
Eventually, the government had to make a decision between rockets and Concorde and chose to go with Concorde. So the rocket era sort of faded in the mid-50s. But this site's been building on that legacy, building electronics for harsh environments, particularly space, ever since, really. And we've then grown. The name has changed a number of times over that period, but it's the same core business and same people who have been here ever since.
But so the original connection with the location was because of the airport that was originally here then?
No, not particularly, actually. No. It was more the government wanted to have a facility where you could make use of the wider population in the Hampshire area.
Yeah, right.
And the skill set, but close enough that you could actually get to the Isle of Wight to do the activities.
So it's the Isle of Wight link.
So it's the Isle of Wight link with the rockets. Yeah, correctly. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, you can't see the runway anymore, but you can still see that in the name of the airport service road that runs alongside.
Absolutely, and obviously there will be people that have no idea that there was an airport here once upon a time, and other than those names. But in terms of that location, that was right where this site is now.
Correct.
Yeah. Ah. Interesting. So the site itself, what goes on here now?
So primarily we build satellites for space. Mm. So in terms of what that really means to you or I, if you watch TV using a satellite dish, so Sky or Freesat, that comes from a satellite that we've built here.
Right.
If you use a weather app, the Met Office or such like, the satellite data that is collected to make that weather prediction comes from the satellites that we built here, the instruments we built here. So that's the core of what we do. And if you're someone on the Navy ship and you want to dial home, we provide the hardware that gives the modems that converts the audio into data and the dishes to transmit it to the satellites and our satellites to send it back home. So actually, it's quite a proud thing to think that you're supporting our troops. So, you know, if they want to ring their home, it's our hardware that we produce here that that enables that. And I talk about satellite, and sometimes people struggle to understand the scale of the satellites. It's not necessarily something people see every day and understand. You know, the body of the satellites we build, it's between the size of a small car and a shipping container.
Right.
And when the solar arrays are deployed, the largest ones, it's the wingspan of a commercial airliner. It's about 150 to 4 tons of the satellites that we build. So it's quite an impressive facility if you ever get to come and peer through the window into what we produce.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier the clean rooms.
Yeah.
So they clearly play an important part in satellite construction?
Correct. So the clean room, it's called a clean room because, as the name says, it's a really clean environment. The clean rooms are where we put together and we build the electronics and then we put it together into the complete satellite. The reason they're clean is because when it goes to space, you can't fix it, you can't do anything about it. So we need to make sure that whatever we build survives getting to space and then survives 10, 15 years in space. So we don't want any contamination, we don't want anything else. So the clean rooms we have here, it's about 3,000 square meters, are cleaner than a hospital theatre.
Yeah.
So everyone has to wear hair nets, feet covers, gowns to make sure that they keep that that cleanliness for what we have to do.
So I suppose that raises the question, what are the challenges of that environment, space as an environment for the machinery? You know, what is it that causes you the problems?
So the first bit is getting into orbit. If you've ever seen a rocket launch like the Artemis, the launch that was just taking place last week, it's quite a violent activity. It's basically a massive bomb rocket that fires you up. So you have a lot of vibrations and shaking and noise and temperature changes. So first of all, it's got to survive that. When it gets into orbit, it's fairly benign, apart from the temperature can vary between minus 200 and plus 200 degrees C. The radiation is such that if you take electronics that you build on ground, it would just burn out, the components would all fail. So actually, it's really difficult. It's the harshest environment probably that you can imagine in terms of getting there and then surviving. So we have to do lots of testing. We have a whole bunch of testing facilities to simulate the launch to make sure that whatever we build survives, because once it's up there, you can't send someone to fix it. So it has to work first time.
And you're building the satellites. I take it you're not building the rockets that put them up there.
Correct. So the main focus at Portsmouth is on what we call the payload, the instrument, the really clever bit that collects the data that you need. So if it's in terms of telecommunication, which is sending Sky TV, it's that kind of processing routing. If it's collecting an imagery, it's a camera, it's that kind of thing. That's where we specialise. But we don't build the rocket itself. One of the facts that I'd like to share is that 25% of the world's large geostationary satellites are built here in Portsmouth. And that's quite an impressive fact, that 25% of the world's solutions, and that's because it's such a difficult thing to do that there aren't that many people to do it.
I mean, I suppose to put that into some sort of context then, how many satellites are up orbiting the planet at any given moment in time?
So it's increased quite a lot recently. 10 years ago, you were in the hundreds. Now you're in the thousands.
Right.
The range is between the what we call low Earth orbit, so satellites that are closer to Earth. It's a much more benign environment. Right. It's easier to be involved in. Mm. Where we specialise actually is building the big satellites that go in the geostationary orbit. Geostationary is about 36,000 kilometres from Earth.
Right.
And it means that it tracks as you go around. So when you look at the sky, the satellite stays in the same place the whole time. That's where it's really difficult to put stuff, and that's really harsh. And that's where we put satellites, and there's hundreds of satellites there.
Wow. And I suppose there's the functionality of the satellite itself, you know, what you've put it up there to do, all that technical stuff. But I take it that there's some mechanism that stops all of these thousands of satellites colliding into each other whilst they're up there. Or can anyone just throw a satellite up to do what they want?
So it's regulated by the government, the launch authority. So where right. you're going to launch it from, they want to be satisfied that you are a credible actor, you will be responsible, yep. you have ticked all of the boxes in what you have to do. There are lots of satellites up there, but in general, space is massive.
Yeah.
So there's still kilometres between each of the satellites. So we end up on ground having tracking stations that actually map where all of the satellites are. So it's a bit like air traffic control. Mm. Your air traffic control can see where all of your planes are and direct them. Mm. In space, we have the same. We have on ground, you can track where all the satellites are. And then if you think the satellites are getting close to each other, you can... actually, they will give a ring to the operators to say, can you do a manoeuvre, fire your thrusters yeah. and move it to avoid them getting too close.
Yeah. So it's easy to sort of change their course, as it were, up there.
Well, it's not easy.
No, well...
But it's certainly doable. Yes,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. Ah, interesting. So... In terms of the site itself, you've obviously got these, you know, these great big clean rooms. There's obviously lots of tech going on in smaller rooms and really clever stuff with chips and all yep. sorts. What sort of part does technology play in all of that in terms of, you know, robotics and things like that in the build?
So there's about 1,000 people on site yeah. here, so it's quite a large site. I think it's the second largest private employer in Portsmouth.
Right.
And robotics is quite a big element. So it's not quite the production of a car factory. So a car yeah. factory is very heavily automated. We're not in that quantities. You know, we're talking in the small tens per year that we're producing. But we've moved from a very... person-orientated approach to something that's a bit more hybrid, what they call Factory 4.0. So we make use of robotic arms and AI to try and do some of the more mundane jobs so that the people we've got can then focus on the clever stuff. So the clean rooms we've got, particularly where we build some of the equipment, it takes many years to be trained and to pass the qualifications to be able to build the stuff. And we don't want to waste their time with screwing bolts in. So we use... robotic arms, for example, yep. to manually physically screw the bolts in
yep.
so that we can then put our people onto the clever stuff, the important stuff. And I think actually a big bit about the site is the people, because you could take all of the people away from this site and you still have the same facilities, yep. but it just wouldn't operate. It's that learnt knowledge yep. over all of those years. That's what really makes us able to deliver what we have, and actually it's that personable touch to be able to build things, correct things, to be able to come up with the design, the future thinking. That's what you can't get with a robotic arm, and as good AI is, it's not going to replace a human in terms of some of the more critical things that we do.
So kind of before we talk then about that kind of person-centred career aspect and kind of just rounding off on the site.
Yeah.
It's a huge site with that many people on and the stuff you've got here. And as with a lot of places, sustainability becomes quite important and quite key. How do you look after that here?
So... sustainability is quite a hot topic for us,
yeah,
because of really it's a socially responsible thing to do. So we have put in place what we call High Five Plus and High Five and five of the five targets of energy and water, CO2, waste and emissions.
Yeah.
And we set some quite ambitious targets 10 years ago to say, right, we've got to reduce them significantly. Mm. So we've reduced, for example, the amount of water we use by 70% over the last 10 years, and the amount of energy by 50%. And it's quite an important thing for us. And it's not just about doing it because it's socially responsible, but also it actually makes an advantage to us. So we've replaced, for example, the gloves in the clean room with green gloves that are biodegradable and can be recycled rather than just being one-time use. And actually, it's better for us, and we can get... We actually make savings from some of the sustainability initiatives that we do in terms of being able to use, reuse the cleaning coats and wash them rather than using one-time things.
Yeah, yeah. And that's often the case, isn't it, that people find that actually when they really look sensibly at some of those sustainability initiatives, it does actually, from a business perspective, also make good financial sense to... to be far more sustainable.
So it costs money up front to do some of this stuff, but actually over the long term, it saves us money, and that's the reason. You know, it's thinking long term, not just short term.
And I suppose with a site like this, it's very easy to view it as a big concrete footprint, big buildings, etc. But flicking through the little book in reception, there's a section in there on your beekeeping. So what on earth's that about?
So yes, if everything goes wrong with satellites, we will still survive through selling honey. Yeah. So one of the like all businesses, actually work can be difficult, can be stressful at times, particularly if you've got difficult things to do. So we've been spending quite a lot of effort in what we call our Portsmouth initiatives. So the initiatives we have on site that are non-work related, but give people the time to connect with each other or unwind and relax. So before I get to beekeeping, we have a singing group. We have a running club. We've got a whole bunch of activities that we do. And one of them is beekeeping. And one of the things we thought in terms of improving biodiversity is to bring some bees on site. So bees are great. We've got a bit of land behind one of the buildings, let's bring some bees. And it was a bit of a kind of a off-the-wall thought. But actually, now we've got 12 beekeepers. We produce about 60 jars of honey every year. So it's not going to make us money. But we sell that, and we make the profits of that go towards keeping the beekeeping running and supporting our chosen charity. And it's a way of one of these many initiatives to try and give people a chance to on-site to relax, to do something else, to give them a bit of a break and to refresh, because it's not all, you know, work. You need to have that time to be able to refresh yourself before you get back into it, and then you're more effective and productive.
And I'm wondering whether, being a highly technical business, whether you've applied any of that to your beekeeping. Do you know where your bees are going and how far from the site and things like that? Are you applying what you do with satellites to your beekeeping at all?
Not quite. So we do know roughly where they fly, but we haven't yet built a tracker to go on the bee and to watch them go.
Yeah, I'm sure it's only a matter of time.
there will be someone listening to this who works on site who'll go, I've got that, I'll get on with it. Exactly.
Yeah, no, it'd be interesting to know, wouldn't it? It would. I remember in a previous life, before I came to Shaping Portsmouth, I was involved in a bit of work with the sea eagles that were put onto the Isle of Wight, the white sea eagles, and they were tracked. And it was really, really interesting to see where they were going and how far. One of them was continually flying to Kent and back.
Really?
And they were really quite concerned because it was flying directly through Heathrow Airport every time it went up there. Really interesting stuff from tracking animals.
So the bees, the honey we have doesn't taste of air fuel or pollution. Yeah. So they must be going somewhere that's okay.
But interesting. But so the whole idea of that is more about the people than your kind of sort of environment, being environmentally focused.
Exactly. Well,
it was just an outlet for your staff, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big bit is about, at least a big bit of my passion and what my ambition is to look after the people, because actually it's the people that deliver the work. So you need to look after people. You need to make sure that they are looked after. And these sort of things are an outlet to make people feel a bit happier to come to work, but also a bit proud. You know, when you come to work and we talk about the things we do, it makes the employees feel proud that, first of all, what we build has an impact on people's lives and really supports them.
Yeah, yeah.
But also the wider involvement that we have is something that, that not everyone does and can contribute.
Because there are a number of things in the booklet that jumped out at me, including things like the Charity Champions.
Yeah.
And there you've got an LGBTQ plus group on site. And in fact, I know that you've linked back in with us on the Portsmouth Pride stakeholder group. So there's, you know, there's lots of, and you mentioned the choir as well, lots of different little outlets. And yeah, clearly as a big employer, quite important. And perhaps something we'll come back to in a minute when we talk about something else. But let's go back into that careers piece, and you know that people point of view and the kind of retaining that learned knowledge, because one of the things that you have here is the Early Careers Centre.
Yep.
So what does that do?
So we have actually the biggest early careers centre for space in the UK, right here in Portsmouth. So we've been doing level 4 apprenticeships for about 20 years, and we've evolved to take on level 6 apprentices. And the Early Career Centre is really a home for the apprentices, the graduates and the interns that we bring into the site. And for us, it's quite an important thing because what we do is not so easy to just recruit someone from the wider industry. What we do is quite specialised. So actually a lot of the benefit is to take someone in young and teach them and train them up to be able to then deliver what we need. So the Early Careers Centre, for example, has 3D printers, it has robotic arms so they can practice using them before they go out into the business. We have a dummy clean room with a mock satellite so they can pretend as if it's a real thing, but without the risks of dealing with flight equipment.
Yep.
It's all, you know, flight equipment is something that's quite expensive and quite delicate because it's going into space. You don't want to damage it. Mm. But when you do it in an environment in the Early Career Centre, actually there's no risk. It's about trying the things. And it's really been a great pathway actually for our business. About a third of the site leadership team on the site here have come through the Early Careers Centre as it was through the last period of time, whether that's an ex-apprentice or an ex-graduate. And actually, it builds people with the skills that we need, but also it gives them a whole bunch of skills. And actually, we had a visit to the Early Careers Centre from the University of Portsmouth last month, actually, and they said, what's the best thing about being an apprentice at Airbus? What's the worst thing about being an apprentice at Airbus? And I have to admit, I was a little bit nervous when the apprentices were answering about what's the worst bit. But the best bit, they said, was about the skills they learn, how they're really employable with all of what they've got. And also the fact that we only take on the number of apprentices that we can offer jobs to.
Yeah.
So we don't take on loads of apprentices and then have to try to
relocate them.
We can bring them into the business. Mm. But when they said, what's the worst thing, the apprentice said, the hash browns could be better. And I thought, if that's the worst thing about being an apprentice at Airbus, that's not a bad bit. So that's our new tagline. We build 25% of the world's geostationary satellites, but the hash browns could be better.
Yeah, and that's a good one. And something you should perhaps focus on a bit and try and improve.
Yeah, exactly.
Who'd want to work for a company that produced poor hash browns? Are the hash browns bought in? You're not making them yourself from scratch.
No.
That could be the problem.
That
could be a supply issue.
So we do have a restaurant on site and a coffee shop and a garden with a little hut where we sell pizzas from. And actually, the staff there are excellent, and they do homemade cakes. That's one of the big sellers, but we don't homemake anything.
Yeah, maybe that bring hash browns in house, and they would improve. Yeah, that's going to stick with me for a while now. That the hash browns could be better, but one of the important things you mentioned there was that you only employ enough apprentices to meet the needs that there's jobs to go to.
Yeah,
which links in to perhaps your mentoring matching initiative that you've recently signed up to with Solent Growth Partnership. So how does that work?
Yep, so that's something that was announced last month. Mm. So in Airbus, we get far more applicants to apprenticeships than we can take. And unfortunately, we can't take everyone, but it means we have a large number of high quality apprentices that have come through the early stages of interviews and vetting to make sure that they are really good. But there are other businesses that maybe don't have the same visibility and the same number of applicants. Some SMEs will struggle in that regard. And some SMEs may think that apprentices are quite hard and they're not sure what to do. So what we've done with the Solent Growth Partnership is come up with this matching scheme where we have a pool of apprentices who have almost made it to the Airbus apprenticeships, but are not quite. Yep. They're really good, high quality apprentices, but we can't unfortunately offer them a place. So they will then be offered out to SMEs. So we will provide with Solent Growth Partnership support, training, how to build apprenticeship programs, how to expand it, and a pool of people who are eager and ready to go to try and then support the number of apprentices going out to SMEs in the local area.
Yeah, and it's something we've seen in a number of different places that anyone advertising high quality apprenticeship positions attracts quite an enormous amount of applicants, and clearly there's going to be a bigger portion of high quality applicants than you can take on. But for smaller businesses to run really robust recruitment processes and even just go out and advertise can actually be frighteningly expensive and difficult. So you're doing the legwork for them and offering them those candidates on a plate.
Exactly. So for us, we're doing it because we need to bring in the apprentices that we have. But a byproduct of that is we've already done all of that work for them.
Yeah. It makes absolute perfect sense. I think it's brilliant. I think it's a really clever initiative.
So if there's anyone listening who's a business, small business that would like to get involved with bringing in an apprentice or getting involved in this, contact the Solent Growth Partnership and they'll be able to give you all of the details.
Absolutely. No, really, really good idea and brilliant to see it happening. I remember one of the first times I came here and getting shown around and being given a bit of an intro about the place and that. And someone mentioned that you were, as a business, you were actually quite keen for apprentices to leave later in their career and get experience elsewhere and come back and recruit in. Is that something that's
well,
still...
Well, I'm not sure I would say keen for apprentices to leave, but we do find... I mean, the change of experience and education is all positive in all fronts, isn't it? So I'm not sure I would say we're keen for apprentices to leave, but actually... bringing people in and swapping is a benefit to the whole industry, really.
And so, as a sector, you're perhaps slightly different to some of the other sectors in that what you're doing is so highly specialist. Yeah. It's probably less competitive. And that there is a lot more working together, and we know that there's now Space South Central in existence. What's your involvement as a business in that, and what does that bring to you?
So Space South Central is one of the clusters, and there's a bunch of clusters around the country that is the space cluster that works in a region and tries to bring the businesses together, tries to bring in work to the region, but also promote it. So actually we have Space South Central on site here. So they have co-located at Airbus Portsmouth with us. When they were looking for a home to go to, we've offered them a facility for them to join. And so we engage with Space South Central for a whole range of things, whether that's supporting them in delivering activities, engaging with those businesses, training, that sort of stuff.
And does that play a part in that kind of that specialist recruitment piece? Because through the apprenticeship schemes, that kind of grow your own and you know, hang on to people through a career path is one thing, but there are surely going to be roles where you are looking to recruit people with very specialisms, I guess, engineering specialisms or whatever, and have that experience already, and that must be a lot more difficult than the apprenticeship side.
Correct. So in the apprenticeship side, you bring someone in who is smart and clever and you try to train them to do what you have. Trying to bring someone in experienced is much harder because the space business, whilst it's a real contributor to the UK GDP, actually the number of people are relatively small compared to, you know, the defence industry or something else. So actually the likes of the clusters is a really good way to engage with candidates, recruitment, but also with other businesses and SMEs, because it's a growing, space is a really strong growing area, but it's still a relatively small supply base compared to other industries. So it's a good way of reaching out and engaging with other suppliers to bring in.
Yeah, cool. And then on that front, as an employer, that probably links us into awards. So there's a few awards that have come your way recently, and I know one of those is Best Place to Work.
Yeah.
Through the Hampshire Business Awards.
I guess I was really proud to be site director at the time that we have won that award. So this was the end of last year. We were lucky enough to win the Best Place to Work at the Hampshire Business Awards.
Yeah.
And for me, that was one that is really meaningful because actually, you know, part of it is you operate as a business, but Best Place to Work is really something that shows that you're an employer that looks after your people and people want to work with.
Employer of choice.
Exactly. Yeah. So all of the initiatives we talked about with the bees, with the singing, with going, you know, the running club, with all of early careers, all of that sort of stuff, and all of the conditions and the facilities that you offer, it's a real recognition that actually you're making a difference to people and it's been a place to come to. And having won that award, we were put forward as all winners at the Hampshire Business Awards for Business of the Year.
The overall winner.
And we were lucky at the Hampshire Business Awards to win overall Business of the Year as well. So in our, we have a small trophy cabinet in reception and that's one of the pride of place awards.
Yeah, and probably not down to luck, even though you say you were lucky, probably a reflection on all the good stuff you're doing, and you know, I think it speaks a lot to a business that you're seen by employees as the place they want to work. So how long had you been site director at that point?
So just under a year.
Yeah. So immediate impact.
That's very generous. I mean, I think actually we've been building the culture and building the site for a while.
Yeah.
And I was part of the leadership team before I took over. But we've been trying to, particularly a big focus of mine was to accelerate some of the things we've done. So, whether it's immediate impact or I happened to be in a hot seat at the time was a debate. But it was a really proud thing for us to do.
Yeah. And so you did obviously the Hampshire Business Awards and the double there.
Yeah.
And then obviously the Portsmouth Business Excellence Awards this year.
Yeah.
A bit of a different one because there was a very special award introduced sort of for 1 year only, the Portsmouth Centenary Award.
Yeah.
And you won that at this year's awards.
Yeah, it was extremely surprising. So we were nominated for a number of categories and we were, you know, it was a great place to go. It was a great award ceremony, really enjoyed it. And the awards we were nominated for came and went and we didn't quite win and we were, weren't quite there, but that's okay. And And then they announced the Portsmouth Centenary Award, and I thought, it's not going to be us. There's no chance. You know, we've been around for 75 years. We've contributed a lot. But I just thought, it's not going to be us, you know. But actually, we were announced, and I was in mild shock walking up to the stage to be able to pick it up. And it's a real privilege and honour to secure that award because, as you say, it's a one-off. Yeah. It's a real special thing that isn't going to be given out again. Mm. And it's a real honour that we got to do it. And the judges said it was linked to the past and our involvement in the industrial past and the contributions we've made to the city and the people and everything, but also look into the future, because what we're doing is not just having 75 years, but actually where we're involved and the business we're involved in is quite a future-looking thing. So hopefully there will be many more years to come of excellence where we'll be contributing to again. So yeah, I it was a big shock, but extremely proud to have got that.
Yeah, and I know you said you were surprised, and I suppose it's easy to assume that maybe the winner to that might have been sort of more a sort of, I don't know, one of those sites that are so obviously linked to Portsmouth and its history, because there were a number of businesses up for that award that sort of represented iconic locations.
They did, yes.
But actually, you know, when you break down and look at everything we've been talking about, the history of the site, the things you do, that people focus, the importance of Airbus to the city as a whole, as an employer, and the future, it probably makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, the other nominees in the category were all worthy of winning awards themselves, and there would have been no complaints if any of them had won. And I was just happy that we were nominated in such great company. But it's certainly something that I won't forget for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a great one to have as a one-off as well. It's not one anyone's going to get a chance to win again. So, but whilst talking about the centenary, a business the size of Airbus, and you've kind of alluded to the importance of your connection with the city, particularly for your employees. Yeah. What do you plan to do to mark the centenary?
So it's a great year for Portsmouth as a whole. I mean, the fact that it's a centenary is a fantastic achievement. So we've been getting involved. And I guess the big thing that we're doing with Portsmouth City Council is we're going to take one of our high-resolution optical satellites that's built by Airbus. And on the 20th of June, we're going to take a photo, high-resolution photo of Portsmouth. So it'll be the whole of Portsmouth. And it will be able to be a snapshot in time, 100 years after the start, of what Portsmouth looked like and where it is. There's a whole bunch of things related to that, and maybe I won't spoil the punchline of what's necessarily being planned, but I guess look out, come down to the Common on the 20th of June and you can be part of a big photo.
Yeah, definitely. And when you talk about high resolution, this is not like me, you know, flicking my mobile phone over from 12 megapixels to 50, is it? It's, so, I mean, what level of detail do you capture from that satellite?
So the satellite, the optical satellite, will be 600, 700 kilometres above the Earth. So if you look up, you won't be able to see it. It's so far away. But you will be taking an image that is 50 centimetre, 25 centimetre resolution. So if you think about it, it's pretty... I won't talk about it in terms of pixels because it doesn't quite make sense that way, but you will be able to see people's heads. Yep. You'll be able to make out the people. If you're laying down, you'll definitely be able to tell it's a person. Yep. So actually, you will see a lot of detail. Anything that's in that order of 20... 50 centimetres, you'll be able to see them. So, yeah, we will see people standing around however they are.
Which probably alludes to the importance of having as many people as possible come down to South Sea Common for the point that the photograph is, has been taken.
Yeah.
But so when that happens, and obviously there will be more publicised about this and the time specifically, what does that window look like with a satellite overhead? You know, what's your time frame like for getting that picture?
So we have to be extremely precise. The satellites are flying at about 7 kilometres per second.
Right.
So every second they move 7 kilometres. Yeah. So they're going extremely fast.
Yeah.
So when we pinpoint a time for a picture, that is the time the picture will be taken. So the satellite will fly over, and at the exact time it will pass over Portsmouth, that's when the picture will be taken. So everything will be to the second.
Yeah.
So if you want to be part of a giant picture of Portsmouth, then you need to be there at the right time to be able to take that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a sort of 10, 15 minutes, you know,
window.
Let's get this right. It's the moment it's there, and that's it.
And that's when we're taking a picture of Portsmouth, and you will be in whatever state you will be. Yeah. That's when it's taken, correct?
Yeah, brilliant. Well, that it will be interesting to see, and especially that level of detail. Yeah. And I suppose that just kind of also speaks to the size of the actual picture in reality, in terms of what you could print it out at if you
exactly because it will be the whole of Portsmouth,
that level of detail.
Exactly, it's the whole of Portsmouth, which is kilometres wide, but the pixels will be tiny. Yeah. So you can do extremely high. So that picture will be available for people to download after the day to remember and celebrate that 100th anniversary of Portsmouth being
a city. And what's that date again?
20th of June.
20th of June. Great. So that's one people should mark in their diaries now if they're listening and they want to be part of something that will be historically very special.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
More details on exactly the plans will follow closer to the time.
Great stuff. There is probably loads more that we could talk about, but we've sort of run out of time. But I always like to finish by coming back to Portsmouth and just focusing on the city and asking whoever I'm talking to if there is somewhere within the city that you would recommend that people go to or something for people to do.
Yeah.
What would be your Portsmouth recommendation?
So I have two young children.
Okay.
Our favourite place to go is the Hilsea Lines. So particularly, it's a great place to walk, get outside. Kids can run around when it's sunny. There's a bit of wood in and shade. And there's a whole bunch of historic armaments hidden within the undergrowth in that area. So the kids, whenever we say, can we go out somewhere? Let's get outside. And we say to kids, where do you want to go? That's the one place they go. And as a family, personally, as a family, we love to go. They love exploring under the undergrowth. They love exploring everything and seeing all of the features there. That's the place at the minute. We're quite looking forward to the opening of Hilsea Lido.
Yeah.
Because we quite like getting out and about. We like having a bit of a swim out in the sea. So we're really looking forward to that. And that's opening soon. So actually, place to go at the minute, Hilsea Lines, but I'm...
You might switch to the other side.
I might switch to the Lido when that opens.
And of course, so we're obviously not a million miles away from Hilsea Lines here, but a whole ton of work been done very near to completion. And we've talked about it in a number of different people's recommendations, actually, of different parts of the coastline of Portsmouth. An enormous amount of work that's been done all the way along the back end of the lines and the park at the bottom of it. So it will make for, I think, quite a good spot. But definitely people who've not been in and explored the lines, it is well worth doing for exactly the reason you mentioned, those weird little armaments and things that you stumble across.
And you can take some amazing photos of you and your family in those places. Yeah. It's an amazing place to look at.
Definitely, definitely. And then, yeah, Hilsey Lido, as you say, again, that's cropped up the exact opposite side, and some great work. I mean, the work around the coastline had been done previously on that side, but yeah. A brilliant job of renovating the Lido that's been done. It's looking really, really impressive. Great little cafe around the back there. Yeah. And I know the team at Fairways have got a bit of a project coming, the Phoenix project, with some wooden, carved wooden sculptures that are going to go on that side yeah. of the park. So that whole great little walk from both sides of the road, and obviously the bridge connecting the two. So yeah, great. You'll probably be able to find you'd be able to combine the two quite nicely, the Lido and the Lines.
That's true.
So
we can start off in the Lines, yeah. and when the kids get a bit tired, we can yeah. take them to the Lido
for a swim. Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Well, it's been great chatting to you, Sam. Really looking forward to seeing what happens on the 20th of June down on Castle Field, and the eventual photograph and what that ends up looking like. But also following more about what goes on here on the site, how things develop for the future. You know, technology clearly playing a big part in everything you do in the age we're in. But most importantly, looking forward to coming back to see if the hash browns have improved.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Cheers, Sam.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.